thank you.
I'll just say right here, you know.
Okay, for the Pajaro Valley seawater intrusion, Mr. Rose.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Young. So, Mr. Packard isn't going to go far because number 19 is the Pajaro Valley seawater intrusion status report, and Mr. Young, we do have a card on this one. Mr. Packard will give us a brief status and summary.
So I provided in the agenda, or we provided a short discussion of the background of seawater intrusion in the Pajaro Valley. And I took most of this material straight off of the website of the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency. So I want to give them credit for that. And I also want to point out that we included in the staff report a document that they provided, which is an overview of the agency, and also two letters that we sent to the agency last year in response to their ongoing basin management plan update process. And we asked them to consider, at what point will they consider controlling groundwater pumping, and also asked them to include water conservation measures in that basin management plan update process. And we have a yellow supplemental sheet that you should have that is in response to the pumping, controlling of pumping issue. And the agency had a meeting on that a couple weeks ago.
I don't think we have that.
You don't have that one? Okay.
I don't have a supplemental for 19.
Yeah, I don't know that there was a supplemental.
There was. Apparently you don't have it. But
Can someone grab copies out of the box?
Copies in the box, yeah. But so the agency had a meeting of their board of directors, and they discussed it, and they had their attorney give them an opinion. So that's interesting reading. I won't get into it, but it will be something you want to look at. Our conclusion is, while the agency is doing has made a lot of efforts over the years and some good projects, including using reclaimed water from the city of Watsonville's plant to replace groundwater pumping at the coast, we don't see resolution of the imbalance in the pumping being resolved in the foreseeable future. We asked the agency to have someone here at this meeting to give you an update.
Oh, sorry.
I'll just let Roger finish here.
You know, the reason is it said item 11C on it.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I filed
I
that.
I thought it was something else.
The agency's number.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No, it
okay.
Just as a general comment to staff, it's helpful when you put something on the bottom of these.
Yeah.
At least let us know where we're to put it into the...
In the corner, yeah.
In the binder.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not that obvious. Other times
Good
it's
point.
Very obvious. Okay.
Okay. So you do have that document. And Mary Bannister, the general manager of the agency, has graciously agreed to give us all an update today, which we really appreciate. So unless you have some questions for me now, I'd like to turn the time over to her for an
excellent
presentation. And she has some handouts of her slides. I'll pass out.
So we're going to give her some time here.
The PowerPoint. Oh, you're working on it. Thank you. Thank you, board and staff. Mr. Briggs, it's good to be here. Chairman, we appreciate your invitation for us to come speak before you. I'm also joined by one of our directors, Dave Cavanaugh. He's actually the chair of our ad hoc basin management plan committee that Mr. Packard referred to a moment ago. So I will give you an update. The second slide has an outline of the presentation. We're going to talk a little bit about the agency's overall purpose, boundaries, water usage, and the overdraft problem, and then where we've been, where we are, and where we see we're moving forward to. The next slide, we The Pajaro Valley is located not very far from here. I'll show a map in a moment. We're a 70,000-acre watershed, 110 square miles. We have about 25,000 acres of irrigated agriculture, very high-value crops, strawberries, lettuce, artichokes. The city of Watsonville is the urban hub, and it has a population of about 50,000. And our agricultural economy is significantly over $500 million a year. We're a state special district formed in 1984 by an act of the legislature. And our mission is to prevent further increase in and reduce the long-term overdraft in the Pajaro Valley. And there is language in there regarding preserving the agricultural economy that we so enjoy in that area. We actually encompass a lot of Santa Cruz and and Monterey counties, and a little bit of San Benito County to the east. So here's a map showing you our boundaries. To the north is Soquel Creek Water District. If you're familiar with the area, Freedom Boulevard is roughly our northern boundary. To the east, we're bounded by the San Andreas Fault Rift Zone, roughly, and to the south by Elkhorn Slough. You've heard it before, whiskey's for drinking. We've had a history of controversy at the agency. I've been there about 11 years, and I think we've had probably close to a dozen lawsuits during the time I've been there. I was at a conference recently. A very well-known water attorney from California was speaking about water law in California, and Pajaro came up several times in her talk, and afterward I walked up and introduced myself to her. I said, "Hi, I'm Mary. I'm from Pajaro." She said, "Oh, I'm sorry." It's been a long, tough journey. We lost a lawsuit in 2007 regarding how we were collecting our augmentation fees. We charge for water pumped out of wells. We have meters on all the big wells in the valley. We were found not to be in compliance with Prop 218, and that was tied very closely to the Bighorn case. We ended up making refunds of over-collected fees to the tune of over $11 million. Our annual budget's about $10 million, so that was pretty devastating to the agency. But we're back on track. We ended up doing a new Prop 218 compliant rate increase effort in 2010 and received 74% support of fees, which basically doubled what the prior fees were. So we do have these augmentation charges, which were $80 an acre foot. They got about exactly doubled to $160 for pumped water in most of the area of the valley. Delivered water rates, which is the supplemental water that we actually deliver in the coastal zone, went from $212 an acre feet to $300. And as a result of that effort, it was a long, hard effort, but we did a lot of community outreach. I think that had been one of our problems in the past, that we had not had an adequate outreach effort, and we received a lot of support by the grower community and the community as a whole. Next slide, please. Some of the numbers in the staff report are a little bit outdated. I wanted to give you some more updated water usage numbers for the past decade. And these aren't all the years in the past decade, so in the back of your packet, your slide packet, there's another Excel table that shows year by year. I just took 2000, 2005, and 10 and realized I caught kind of the lower water usage years. So in this table, I added 2008, which is one of the higher, 62,000, probably the highest water usage year in the past decade. And obviously, rainfall and climate has a lot to do with these numbers. So the next slide shows what the problem is in the Pajaro Valley. So this is a close-up of the coastal zone. Elkhorn Slough is to the south, and La Selva Beach is to the north. That's near our northern boundary. We have seawater intrusion that down in that southern area is as much as 3 miles inland and then tapers down to the north. Next slide, please.
The old BMP was adopted in 2002. There was actually a basin management plan done in 93 as well, but so this to me is the old BMP, but we're working on a new one. But the old BMP talked about four real major parts of the solution for the overdraft, and the biggest component was an import pipeline that would have tapped into a CVP supply. We have an entitlement to 20,000 acre feet of CVP supply annually, but because of the Central Valley Project Improvement Act, we know that it's doubtful if ever we would see that supply. So the import pipeline project has, for all intents and purposes, been taken out of any future plans for a solution. The other two big components, three, were recycled water, a Harkin Slough project, and a conservation component of about 5,000 acre feet per year. We have been successful in doing the bottom three to a great extent. So the next slide.
Mary, can I ask just a quick question? Can you tell me what is the Harkin Slough project?
I'll talk about that in a moment.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay, thank you, Doctor.
And how much do you need to offset?
The old BMP, the old modeling showed we needed about 18,000 acre feet a year. Now we've done a new groundwater model. We had the USGS. Our old model was called an ISGM model. The USGS worked closely with us. We've spent almost $1 million upgrading that old model. Our new ModFlow model shows that with these new projects, which I'll talk about in a moment, in place, the overdraft number is down around 12,000 acre feet a year. And so it's showing that the projects we have constructed have had a demonstrable effect on reducing the overdraft. So we're delighted in that. But as Mr. Packard said, we have more to do yet. Next slide. There's my animation, sorry. Okay, next slide, sorry. So a decade of construction. I showed up in about 99, and we had just awarded our first construction project at that time, which was the Harkin Slough project. The Harkin Slough project is a project where we have water rights on a slough that's channelized down in the coastal area. We take water from that slough, and during flood times, actually, we haven't started pumping yet because we have had very little rain this year. But normally, by this time, we pump floodwaters that otherwise would be diverted directly to the ocean up into a recharge basin. So we have water rights for 2,000 acre feet a year of diversion off the slough.
That water entering the slough? Over here. That water entering the slough, is that essentially stormwater from the city of Watsonville?
Yes, it is. And also from the sloughs upstream, there's natural drainage into those sloughs.
Because the slough, and outside of flood times, the slough is brackish, right?
It can be. It depends on... This year, the Pajaro River didn't breach, and we had storm surge, and it ran seawater up the sloughs. Normally, the water quality in the sloughs is excellent. It's actually very good quality. But this year, we'll have to watch until that we get some rain, and that seawater that got pushed up the slough flushes out. It's very flat down in the, as you know, down in the valley there. So a decade of construction. We broke ground in 99 for the Harkin Slough project. And starting in about 2005, we began completion of 20 miles of a pipeline distribution system in the coastal area. We constructed a recycled water facility, which was completed in 2008. And Mr. Jeffries was at our ribbon cutting for that project, and we're very excited about that. So with these combined water supply sources, we're looking at about 7,000 acre feet of supplemental supply. I'll be clear that we have not yet delivered that amount of supplemental supply in any given year. We're ramping up with the deliveries of the recycled water. We've delivered as much as 3,000, and each year we're increasing the deliveries. There's been a big learning curve for the grower community taking recycled water. They were a little nervous about that at first, but we're fortunate to have Castroville next door, who's been delivering recycled water for decades now, and so we're moving into that and increasing the supplies every year.
Excuse me, Mary. Through the chair, can I ask a question?
Sure.
So I'm confused between, excuse me, the 7,000 acre-foot figure and the 3,000 acre-foot figure. So was this what was expected, and the 3,000 is the reality so far?
So far, and 7,000 is our goal with the current projects in place, yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Mary, I think if you had a 7,000 million gallon a day source there, your problems would be solved.
Right, that was my question.
The 7 million gallons per day is the capacity of the recycle facility. However, the irrigation...
That would be 7 billion gallons a day.
Oh, it should be... Oh, good catch. Okay. It should be 7 MGD. Right. Sorry.
Okay.
It would. And then some. Next slide, please. So here's our 20 miles of coastal distribution system. Our groundwater modeling, both the old modeling done for the 2002 Basin Management Plan, as well as our new ModFlow groundwater model, show that in order to have the most dramatic effect on stopping seawater intrusion, we get the biggest benefit by stopping pumping in the coastal zone. So this... if you're familiar with Pajaro Dunes, would be the little line to the left above the Pajaro River. There's a little road with some little lines. That's the Pajaro Dunes area. The Pajaro River kind of goes through the middle of that map. Elkhorn Sloughs and Moss Landing are down at the southern end, so to give you some idea of the extent of that project. Next slide, please. This is the Hurricane Slough.
I'm sorry to interrupt you again.
That's okay.
If you could go back to that slide again, I'm very interested in understanding. So the pipeline system is running into agricultural areas,
yes.
So for ag use. And where is the source? Where is the pumping occurring, or is there a central facility that's
supplying water through that pipeline?
Yeah.
So before the pipeline was built, everyone in the valley relied on wells. Our agricultural users in the valley use about 85% of the water in the Pajaro Valley. Oh, thank you. And all of that, virtually. The city has a little surface water treatment plant, but virtually all the water used in the valley is well water. And in this case, I can't make it work, Harvey. Oh, there it is. Oh, sorry. Okay, the recycled water facility is right here.
Okay.
So that pump delivers water into the coastal distribution system. The Harkin Slough project is up here.
Uh-huh.
And the recharge basin's over here. So water is pumped out of that the area surrounding the recharge basin. Once the Harkin Slough water is recharged, we turn around and take it back out, blend that with water from the recycle, and then we have a couple supplemental wells here, and we have a connection to the inland city potable supply. So all of that water is combined and delivered through that distribution system.
Great, thank you. I have a much clearer picture now.
Yeah. You're welcome. So here's our Harkin Slough project. This is our recharge basin. It's about 12 acres, and we recharge around 1,000 acre feet a year of water when there is water to be recharged. As I said, we're kind of waiting patiently for some rains to come so we can get water moved up there. And we've recharged about 7,000 acre feet of water into that basin in the last 10 years. So that's been a good project. We have had some trouble getting that water back out, but we have we're fortunate to have Stanford University and UCSC professors working on that recharge basin to come up with ways to make it more effective in terms of recovering the water that we recharge.
Excuse me, Mary. Through the chair, you mentioned 12 acres for the basin. The pond there looks maybe half an acre. Is the 12 acre the watershed to the pond?
Oh, no. That pond, that's about 9 acres of wetted surface right there.
So the surface of that body of water is 9 acres?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't understand the I understand the concept of using the pond to recharge in order to block the seawater intrusion. What are you taking back out? What's that about?
In the in the that part of the Pajaro Valley in this area, there's a clay layer that extends through most of the floor of the valley and then up to the terraces on the north and south side. This is up off San Andreas Road on the north side. That clay layer is about sea level, and this pond is at about 100 feet above sea level. And the original concept was that the water would be recharged, it would mound on that clay layer, and there's extraction wells, 10 extraction wells surrounding the pond, and that that water would be pumped back out during the irrigation season.
So this is essentially not a mechanism to put water into the ground to block seawater. This is a water storage mechanism with a large underground component.
Good point. It was designed to be what we call an aquifer storage and recovery system, where the water got put in and taken right back out. It hasn't really functioned that way, but we feel the hydrologists are confident that this is improving the water quality in the basin. And in fact, in groundwater wells surrounding this, they've seen an improvement in the water quality. So although it's not operating the way it was designed optimally, it still is enhancing the repelling of the seawater intrusion in that area. This is our wastewater treatment facility. It's located, as you saw earlier, ideally it's down right in the area of the coastal distribution pipeline, and the old facility is to the this is west, the ocean's down this way, this is the Pajaro River. So this is the old secondary treatment facility in this area. Everything from here this direction is the new facilities that LEED certified operations center, and then here's the clarifiers, UV system, and microfiltration are what are used, really advanced state-of-the-art processes to produce 4,000 acre feet is the capacity we have. It could produce more than that, but not 7,000 MGD, clearly. But we could deliver more than we have. One of our challenges right now is to find winter storage for the recycled facility. We shut the plant down this time of year because there's no demand. We don't have very much storage. Well, we only have 1 million gallons, which is 3 acre feet storage on site. So part of the basin management plan update is looking to, as you can see, there's areas on this property where we could put more tankage. Ideally, we would put some of the recycled back into the ground, but that's very expensive for Orange County can do it because they have 15 million people to kind of subsidize that kind of an effort. In the Pajaro Valley, agriculture and a small urban population would have to pay for that kind of thing. And right now, the way the regulations are, injecting recycled water would be very cost prohibitive. Well, we're looking at it, but it is going to be an expensive alternative. So I'd like to unless there are any other questions about my part, I'd like to turn this over to Dave Cavanaugh.
Just one other question. Are you looking at surface storage as a way to retain winter water?
We have looked at that, and in the Pajaro Valley, we're in an area of prime ag land, and surface storage means dams. You know, let's all be frank. And I always say any time you can look up and see the San Andreas Fault Rift Zone, and most of the areas where we could do surface storage are on, if they're on creeks, they're either steelhead or salmon fisheries, it becomes expensive as well.
Didn't College Lake used to be substantial and ultimately get drained for
yes,
agriculture?
Yes, and that's probably one of the highest likelihood projects that we'll be evaluating under the new basin management plan.
And what would the storage capacity of that be?
Not much, maybe 4,000 acre feet a year.
Mr. Jeffries.
I just have one question. Have you been in talks with South County, which I mean South Santa Clara County, of using their water, recycled water?
Yes, we actually are partners with them in the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan efforts, the IRWMs, that you may be familiar with. And you probably remember, Mr. Jeffries, that there was a time in the past, I guess that's been probably 10 years ago, when they had asked if we wouldn't be willing to take some of their excess supplies. And they have kind of the same problem we do. They have demand in the summer, their excess supplies in the winter. So they face sort of the same challenges. But we are partnered with them to look at ways that we might integrate projects that would work for both of us.
How would the transportation of that, is that a potential pipeline, or were you going to use the Paro River, which...
Those are the two that we've evaluated. The pipeline is so expensive now with... crossing the San Andreas Fault and what have you. The old pipeline design that was done for the CVP water supply was a big diameter pipeline. There is a possibility of doing a smaller diameter pipeline or putting it in the Pajaro River. Unfortunately, the water quality in the Pajaro River is not very good most of the year, so it would be taking really highly treated water and putting it into a system that would, you know, increase the salts and what have you.
My concern, and I've said this several times over the years, of the Paro River, especially the flooding portion of it, with them discharging their excess, especially during the wintertime when there's high peak flows from the San Bernardino River into the Paro. And has that been in the conversation as well?
Yes, we're not a flood control agency, but we work pretty closely with them, and I know that there's been a lot of discussion surrounding that.
Mr. Delgado.
Yes, Mary, thank you for the presentation. And I was just curious about one figure, 8,600 acre-feet of water per year for municipal and industrial. Can you give me a few examples of the big municipal and industrial users?
That's mostly the city of Watsonville, and then, industrial, a lot of the canneries now are gone. We have Delmar Foods does peach and different kinds of fruit and vegetable freezing and packing, and they also do sardine packing, and we have Martinelli's is one of our big industrial users, and then mainly it's the city of Watsonville, and then there are smaller mutual water districts throughout the valley.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, Dr. Hunter.
Just one quick question. You mentioned outreach, and I notice in the report, in the staff report, they also mentioned the ad hoc Basin Management Plan Committee, and I just wonder if you could characterize that for us a little bit.
Dave Cavanaugh will do that next.
Great.
We have a few more slides for you.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
Mr. Johnston.
I'm good.
Okay.
Okay. I'd like to introduce Dave.
Next slide, please. Well, I think Mary was actually going to do this particular one as well. Let me just get started with this. After the successful Prop 218 process to establish our rates that Mary had already mentioned and a strong support from our community, the PVWMA began to look at solutions that would be locally focused. Armed with our perfected ModFlow model that she had mentioned, which was a joint venture between USGS and some local scientists, there was little to no support of a pipeline, import pipeline, to import Central Valley Project water, which in a good year would have allowed up to 13,500 acre feet. It became clear the PVWMA needed to establish a process to allow local citizens, along with the help of a professional consultant team, to offer, consider, and recommend solutions for the very citizens that would benefit. This was the beginning of the Ad Hoc Basin Management Plan Committee, and this process started in late 2010. As this committee took form, something almost miraculous happened. Unbelievably, a broad cross-section of my community stepped up to the plate and committed their time to a two-year process. These community-minded people are highly motivated and work well together. For me, it's inspiring, and I realize that in this chamber that inspiration is not often a word used, but nonetheless, it was very inspiring. We'll be holding our 17th meeting today, and we'll begin to process a handful of projects and water management strategies that the community members that make up the committee are to be committed for their hard work. In not only weighing alternatives, but educating themselves to understand the very technical world of water management. As I had mentioned, I'm very much impressed with this group. It's a lot of hard work, a lot of consideration, just like you folks, to look at stuff that you're not normally used to, and to consider those in addition, looking at a range of projects, 43 of them actually, and understanding them from top to bottom. It's been very difficult, but also a good process. As was mentioned, our target amount to address overdraft is in the neighborhood of 12,000 acre feet. it's a moving target in that, depending on where the water is returned or not pumped from, it changes a little bit. Next slide, please. As has been mentioned previously, our focus is on local solutions. We began to investigate water conservation and found that there is a great deal of interest and successes in our community. As we gather more data, we will begin to assess how this important component will play out in our overall recommendation. We're presently building partnerships in the community and see great opportunity to expand this important aspect. As you might imagine, there's a lot of controversy about who's doing enough. The city often has complained that agriculture is not doing enough and vice versa. The fact is that both are doing a lot. We've seen some pretty amazing things in a recent presentation by an Ag Extension officer, Michael Kahn. We have seen that the proposed amount of water necessary to raise certain crops has been, water use has been way below what was actually recommended. So we're seeing some pretty amazing things. And overall, we're seeing a rollback in water use in the valley.
May I ask a question?
Of course.
Here?
Sure.
Do you see the reduction in water usage because possibly a reduction in agriculture activity? Is the planted acreage and acreage in production the same?
Well, actually, for the longest time, there was a conversion of crops from apples, which used 0.6 to, you know, on average about 0.6 acre-feet per acre, to strawberries, which we had thought were using about 3 acre-feet. And we have found out that actually there's quite a few farms that are down below 1.6 acre-feet in strawberries. And there has been a return back to caneberries, which use less water, especially with the hoop houses, which reduce transpiration. They use less water there as well. And the fact that farmers have been very responsible about looking at the bottom line. The water costs are a part of their profit plan, and they have to look at reducing their water use. The fact that this board and a lot of us are very concerned about salts getting past the root zone, a lot of farmers are doing a lot to manage that as well. So they all have helped to reduce the amount of water applied to agriculture. And the city has done a great job as well. So,
but
there's still more to do. I'm not saying it's perfect yet, of course.
But aside of improvement from, you know, water utilization, is the planted acreage, you know, you had earlier slides showing, I forgot, 4 years back. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure you monitor that. Is the amount of planted acreage within the territory that you cover remaining the same? Is it increasing or decreasing?
It depends how you look at it, of course. There is a certain amount of fallowing going on, which I've seen a lot of fallowed land within the valley, which we haven't seen in past years. So that reduces crop acreage. But it's generally been pretty consistent about the land, land usage. I don't have a number on the fallowing acres yet, but that's something we will discover as we go along. Again, we're looking at conservation and water management strategies as part of our solution.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, conservation, okay, local projects. So the local projects that we're considering will be involved with expanded recycle use and storage. This is a great feather in our cap for the valley, the fact that we have a recycle plant with a distribution system to the coastal area, which is most impacted, is a great asset that we have in the community. We're going to expand that and improve that by water storage and increasing nighttime deliveries as well to get more water out. That was the other part of the equation. Mary had mentioned how much it was capable of, and also bringing in water from Santa Clara County. We haven't maximized our water recycling deliveries yet, and we're working on that presently. We found that some growers are actually going to take water at night, which will help us use more recycled water. We're moving in the right direction that way. The Expanded Harkness Loop Project, I think Mary kind of went through that a lot. We have seen some pretty amazing things with the Harkness Loop Pond. Excuse me. We have noticed that at one point there was in that perched aquifer there was between 125 to 250,000 or 250 parts per million nitrates, and recent testing shows that it's down around 10. That meets federal drinking water standards. So the benefit of Harkness Loop water, which is approximately 700 acre feet per year, pumped into that slough, into that holding area. About 200 acre feet is pumped out. The remaining amount goes to help dilute that perched aquifer. And so we're seeing some really positive things with that as well. Excuse me, something that was unexpected, but we're glad it's happening. The College Lake Surface Water to Coast Project, it was looked at in the 1993 Basin Management Plan, and it was abandoned because of the incredible amount of agencies that we had to work through to try to find a solution there. It is a very obvious project. We should pursue it and to try to make it work. We're going to need the help of your body as well as others to help us find a path through the minefield to make that project work. The county has looked at it as an environmental setting as well, so we're going to have to make it both a water source, water supply project, as well as an environmentally sound project as well. So we're looking forward to that, and it will be part of. Looks like it'll be part of our basin management plan recommendation to the full board, the PVWMA board. Next slide, please.
Before you leave that, can you put your local projects? I didn't see anything. Are you working with Parle Sunny Mesa? Because they're a water purveyor which purveys drinking water to most of your area in Monterey County that you're servicing with your recycled pipeline.
Well, Mary can answer that better. She deals with that. It's kind of out of my jurisdiction, but I know that they're part of our integrated regional water approach, which, by the way, I might mention our basin management plan has other water boards on it as well. So we have a good picture of an integrated approach as well on the basin management plan committee.
Well, the reason I ask that, because that's most of your area that has the deepest penetration of seawater intrusion. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see anything that you're working with Parle Sunny Mesa.
We have original jurisdiction over that area, so to my understanding, but I'm going to let, again, that's out of my field, so let Mary answer that.
Actually, we work closely with them. In fact, we're going to meet with them to talk about getting some grant funding their way, because they serve a disadvantaged community, and there's an opportunity coming up with a round of funding for this. It's actually an integrated regional water management plan implementation grant. But more importantly, our coastal distribution system is down in the southern part, south of the Pajaro River, is protective of their wells. Their wells are just inland of where we're delivering water and stopping that coastal pumping.
Since you're up there, you probably can answer this question. Are you in talks with the proposed desal plants that are going to be in Moss Landing?
We've met with both the proponents before, yeah.
Because that would surely improve your water quality for your distribution system.
Actually, this is a long story, but desalinated water is low overall in salt, but high in sodium and chlorides, which are the tough salts for agriculture. So between the expense and the salts that are in desalinated water, it's not ideally suited for agriculture.
Mr. Delgado, and then Mr. Johnston.
Thank you, Dave. This is for you.
Okay.
Earlier you touched on night deliveries of water, and I wondered if you could expand, for my sake, on the benefit of doing that, and whether the farmers on the recipient end, are they irrigating it at night, or what are they doing with that night-delivered water?
Yes. The nighttime deliveries was something that we've promoted because of the taxing of the system during the day, during midsummer. At its peak amount, we could not really deliver much more. And as you might imagine, during the farming season is when you use most of your water. During the winter, you don't use much water at all from the recycling plant. So we're trying to figure out ways to we have had some discussion about injection, which seems extraordinarily expensive, and we've also had quite a few conversations about storage and using storage areas throughout the area to increase our ability to supply during those peak times. But it is a way to actually take water and use the system 24 hours a day rather than just the 12-hour, you know, daytime. So that's...
And then when the farmers get it at night, what are they doing with it?
They're applying it directly to the fields. There's not much... We pressurize the water from the recycle plant. And if they tried to store it on their property, then they would have to pump, you know, they'd obviously have to pressurize it again and you know, distribute it throughout their fields that way. So they try to use pressurized water to cut their costs. Comes out about $100 to $120 per acre foot to pump your own water to pressurize it. So they try to stay away from that, you know.
And then when they do irrigate it at night, is there a substantial reduction in evaporation?
Yes.
So it helps them as far as the conservation,
yes,
and the cost on
15 to 20%.
20%. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
If I may supplement to Mr. Mayor on
okay,
this,
go
it's
ahead,
part of ET, evapotranspiration, and the plant material transpires, and then you have evaporation of the soil. So the combination of reducing transpiration and evaporation is a benefit that is being discussed here, mm-hmm, by nighttime irrigation.
Right, and that you said 17% reduction in evapotranspiration?
We'll refer to about 20% total.
15 to 20. It depends on what the, you know, obviously the humidity is, the wind, all those type of things, what you're comparing it against. The great news is there's some semi-stations within the area that we can compare water to, irrigation to figure out the best time to apply water, when we need to apply it throughout the valley. And we're seeing a lot more farmers using that modern technology. Now, one of the systems called Hortal, that they're utilizing to reduce their water amounts that they're using on their fields.
So the 20% includes less evapotranspiration and less evaporation.
Right.
Overall, 20% conservation.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Johnston.
I was just curious about the economics for the farmers between buying recycled water from you at 300 something an acre foot and pumping it themselves with an augmentation fee of 160 an acre foot and a cost of $100-$125 to pump it. So it appears to me to still be cheaper for the farmers to pump their own water than to get recycled water from you folks. So how are you moving the farmers to use your water if it costs more to do that than to pump their own until their own well turns salty?
Slowly and through an education process. The reality is if we don't solve our water problems, we have to build projects. Now we're paying an extraordinary amount of money. So those are people that are being responsible, those people that are buying into it, which we're seeing more and more people do, that then we don't have to build expensive projects. And a lot of people are getting that.
So what percentage of the farmers that you're targeting for use of recycled water are buying recycled water from you, and how much of their water are they buying from you? Do you have a sense of that?
Mary's going to have to answer that specifically. She's being co-opted here. So. Sorry. Yeah.
The $160 an acre foot pumped water is an average. On the coast, actually, there's a zone. The people within the delivered water zone, for them to pump from their groundwater wells closer to 200. And so then when you add that, you're doing good math there. When you add that offset pumping costs, they're about the same.
So how are you doing as far as, like, what percentage of your targeted farmers are you actually getting to buy?
So we're delivering close to 3,000 acre feet a year. We'd like to deliver that 7,000. We're about halfway there right now.
And if you were delivering the 7,000 acre foot a year, how much of the how much would it be, would still be being pumped from those wells? I'm trying to figure out what the total market is and how much of it that 7,000 is.
Well, you should come to our meeting today. That's what we're going to talk about. Those are very good questions. The coastal zone right now pumps about 10,000 acre feet. Some of that is outside. The original design for our coastal distribution system was to go north another half a mile or mile, probably a mile north, and for there to be more distribution system. Because we were so financially strapped 5 years ago, we weren't able to expand to the north. But ideally, we'd put more pipe in, and we'd be able to capture 9,000 acre-feet of delivery.
They're pumping 10,000. You're pumping 3, so the total market's maybe somewhere in the 13,000 range?
10,000, nine or ten.
Okay. Nine or ten.
Yeah, and we would
and
need
to
add more
seven
pipeline
of it ultimately.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
We're well, seeing more people come on board, and it is a matter of selling it to people and making them aware of the benefits of doing so. Any more questions on this slide? We'll go to the next one, please. This is a typical worksheet that we looked at. We looked at 43 projects. They involved all this information that you see up there. This gave us a preliminary idea of what they would contribute, how much they might cost. And so, again, we went through all these. We looked at them closely. And we're presently boiling them down to a handful now. And we're going to have an extensive discussion today on the few projects and how we're going to stack these things and make them work throughout the valley. Any questions on that one? Next slide. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So this project would be to pump water out of College Lake in the summer through the sewage system to make more water available for the recycling program?
This is one of the projects out of 43 that we looked at, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. All right, thank you.
We're considering a lot of College Lake alternatives. This is one of them.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
My guess is some of the board members are not familiar with College Lake. It's, you know, if you were to say you're going to pump water out of Lake Tahoe, put it in the sewer system, wouldn't sound so good. So maybe can you describe what actually happens with College Lake currently as far as water accumulation?
College Lake is an ephemeral lake that floods over agricultural land. The land is owned by people that lease that property out to farmers during the summer. So the water fills up because of the clay layer underneath there. It sits there through, I think, June is when they're allowed to start pumping according to Department of Fish and Game regulations, and then they drain it, and then they farm it. We would instead, and there's got to be, obviously you're asking me something ahead of the game here. We haven't had this full discussion on every potential aspect of this, but there is... the concept that it would be left as a permanent body of water. We have to have that discussion with the farmers, the landowners, et cetera, yet. So I'm getting ahead of myself. So it's not a pristine body of water, no, not at all. Next slide, please. The new rate sunset in 2015, the board and my board and all of us wisdom decided that we needed to hold our nose to the grindstone. I know it drove Mary and her staff crazy to do this, but we said that by 2015 we were going to reestablish our rate structure, and we put a sunset on it. By June 2012, we will have the recommended basin management plan from the Basin Management Plan Committee. On January 2013, we'll be doing the draft EIR. We're doing a co-committed EIR process right now because of the short period of time that we have to bring everything together. So as we discover projects and single them out, the consultant staff has also been collecting information for the EIR. On August 2013, the board certifies the EIR and adopts the Basin Management Plan. Of course, that's optimistic. Like all boards, we're going to hammer the heck out of it and ask a lot of questions. So in 2014 to 2015, hopefully we'll be able to reestablish the new rate structure, most likely through a Prop 218 process as a fee or a charge. It could possibly be an assessment. We don't know yet. With that, that's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Wolf.
And this ties to the earlier question about the economics for agriculturists to use recycled water. With a recent EPA regulation that requires diesel generators to be either retrofitted or replaced to meet the new standards, a lot of the agriculturists use diesel generators for pumping because they're not tied to the electrical grid. So have you seen that to be an economic incentive to buy the recycled water rather than, you know, spending the several thousand dollars of capital equipment replacement? And the grants to replace the generator have not been very significant. So,
right. I really can't speak to that with any authority. You know, I mean, a lot of the pumps are electrical, driven electrically. There are some diesel generators, and there has been a lot of discussion in the farm community about the extraordinary costs of replacing those. So, yeah, I'm sure it plays into their, into some farmers' plan, economic okay. plan.
Thank okay. you. Any other board questions or the agency? Okay.
We have another couple of questions, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure which of you this is for, but... when you were talking about, you were answering Board Member Johnson's question about the market demand, probably Mary, about the demand and how much replacement water. What I think Mr. Johnson was trying to get a handle on the percentage that you're talking about, but that demand you're talking about was just in the coastal zone, right?
Yes.
And seawater intrusion is actually a function of total withdrawal from the basin, and in the staff report we had some figures of up for projections of 2040 of substantially larger figures, you know, in the 60,000 acre foot per year range, right, for the pumping from the basin.
Right, and that last, in the handout, the very last sheet shows a decade of water usage. It's the Excel spreadsheet in the back. And what we've seen over the last decade is that the water usage is fairly flat. The city of Watsonville has grown, I don't know the numbers, but they have grown, but they've also implemented a lot of conservation measures, and they have surface water supply in Coralitos Creek that they're expanding. So we see that the city usage has been flat. It certainly will grow some. As well, the agricultural usage, as Dave alluded to, has, if anything, flattened. If you look at the numbers over the past decade, I'll tell you, it was a surprise to me because there has been a lot of conversion, a lot, I don't know, 5,000 acres maybe. I mean, out of 25,000, probably not that much, probably a couple thousand, of apples into berries. But there's also been conversion from apples and strawberries into these caneberry crops. And what we're seeing is just most everything grown in the Pajaro Valley is grown with drip. So we do have some pretty advanced methods of irrigation in the valley right now. So.
Okay, and then you said that your overdraft basically, you know, sort of had a miracle with a new model of dropping from, was it 18,000 to 12,000 acre feet per year?
Right, but in that time we've also implemented these projects where we're delivering and percolating in the Ark and Slough project. We're delivering on the average 2,000 to 3,000 acre feet of water the last few years in that key coastal zone.
Right. So, but with this new model, I would guess that you're going to be constantly testing that model in terms of the response of the basin
yes.
compared to the model.
Yes.
And is that going on now, and how is it working out?
It is going on right now. We've only started using that model. The fish, I shouldn't probably say this, the official USGS report for that model, documenting that model, isn't even published yet, but we've begun using it because we have to have it available to us to do this important work we're doing. So we're testing it and calibrating it as we move along. And one of the other questions I had, because I agree with you, Mr. Briggs, that the numbers, there was something surprising in there, but the old model showed water usage of some of the numbers from the old BMP that are in the staff report of 60,000 acre feet of ag usage. And our ag usage, if you look at that graph, is really more down around 45,000 acre feet. So part of that was accommodated by the fact that the ag usage numbers aren't up where we had predicted them 10 years ago.
Right. So if you were to be able to fully utilize the recycled water, and if you were successful with even part of the College Lake project, and if the model is correct, you see that you would be able to actually beat the overdraft.
We think we're close. We think the numbers are going to pencil out. The College Lake project's going to be an expensive project. The lower cost projects are going to be figuring out how to get more of these deliveries out of the recycled, and things like perhaps taking some of the recycled water in the off season and percolating it into the Harkins-Lew recharge basin. We were lucky, Dr. Andy Fisher at UCSC just got a grant with Lawrence Livermore Lab to do tracer studies in that Harkins-Lew Basin. They've used it for quite a few studies. And if they can do the tracer study work with Lawrence Livermore, it'll be the foundation for us to go and get a permit to put that recycled, because as staff I'm sure knows, currently under the recycle percolation regulations, you have to have a residence time and a distance before that recycled water is brought back out, and have to have separation from potable wells and so forth. And this will help us get to that point. So hopefully we could recharge some of that recycled water. It might be a lower cost alternative. None of the projects are low cost. You're probably all aware of that. But
okay, thank you.
Could you go back, Mary, to your slide that says the problem? Yeah, I have kind of a question for you. The revisions to the model, bringing the overdraft down to 12,000 acre feet. That one, right. Is that also based on field testing of groundwater in this area to see cause
right.
and effect with
The way the modeling is done is they take current conditions, and we have a very extensive groundwater monitoring network. We know water levels. We test hundreds and hundreds of, several hundred wells annually, some of them quarterly, some of them biannually, and some just annually. But we have a network of hundreds of monitoring wells that we use. So they took that data and the lithology, they built it into a model, and then they went back and looked at the last 10 years, and they calibrate the models based on actual water levels in the basin. So it's a pretty rigorous check back and forth to be sure, and they adjust the model so that it reflects what is seen in reality.
Okay. And I'm looking at the transect of A to A prime, and that's just showing us the geology subsurface. It doesn't show
the seawater. There's kind of a shaded area where it says Aromas aquifer. It's shaded kind of dark blue, and then it gets to be light blue.
Correct.
That's the shaded part is supposed to reflect the seawater intrusion.
The part to the left.
Yeah.
The darker part.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. So when your plan is fully implemented, are we just going to see a cessation of seawater intrusion, or are we going to start to see a reversal of it?
At this point, our goal is to balance the current condition.
Okay.
So at this point, cessation would be huge for us. We're hopeful of that.
And what is your annual rate of intrusion?
12,000 acre feet.
Well, I guess in terms of if we were to look at that, your border.
That's hard. We don't have so many wells that we're able to you know, see like every year that that moves in 50 feet or back. There, we don't have that many wells, but we do have maps. The first seawater intrusion was documented in 1953 in this basin, and we do have, oh, I don't know, maybe 20-year intervals showing that kind of marching inland. So the modeling right now did show, I mean, we were pleased that it did show an effect of the current project. So we think we're applying the water in the right place to get the best bang for our buck. But obviously that...
Okay. Yeah. And when everything is implemented, how is this picture going to change in terms of the light green area encroaching into the area to the right? How much further are we going to see intrusion before you're actually able to get things ceased?
As you all probably are aware, the way these projects are built, it's usually a decade or so to get a project from talking about it, design to construction. The first reports I saw for the recycled facility were from about the mid-90s, and we got it constructed by 2008. And so I think in terms of the horizon that we're looking at in the BMP, we're projecting out about 30 years. However, we anticipate that in 10 years, just as it's happened this time, our BMP will be stale, and it'll be time to take another look. Look at the modeling, look at the effect of the projects that have been constructed, and see then where we are. Are we making enough progress? Is there something we missed? A model's just a model. It's not an exact replication, so I think it's important that we ground truth any effects that we get from these projects.
Okay. Dr. Hunter.
Thank you, Mary. So just so I'm trying to sort out the different ways in which this model is showing us what and where we see elevated levels of chloride. So every one of those small graphs is linked to a well that's being tested for chlorides. Is that it?
Yes, and that's true.
Every one of them is showing a level that's above that takes it out of use, or is this water still usable? Or
those wells, a lot of them are still pumping as needed. We don't have enough supply to provide full supply to everyone in the coastal zone right now, and so there are still wells that are used occasionally in case that our system would go down or what have you. But for strawberries, getting around 300 parts per million chloride starts to be toxic to strawberries. So anything over about 200, we're concerned. And this is not the model. This is actual data versus the groundwater model that anticipates something like 12,000 overdrafted bank account numbers.
Okay. Yeah. So every... What we see there is every single well that's indicated on this graph or this map is showing elevated levels. So throughout your district, even the most eastern areas?
No. This is only 1 or 2 miles inland. So 10 miles inland, there's not an effect. There's not an effect east of this, and not every well within that zone is impacted either, because geology is heterogeneous. There are wells in that area that are still pumping good water, but we use those chloride levels to define the easternmost boundary.
Okay, and then so I understand the lighter green shaded area, that's that coastal strip.
Yes,
that's the area of concern, but that doesn't represent the water district area.
That's just the coastal zone.
Okay.
And
if
that map that I showed that had the distribution system.
Yeah.
So there's the overall, thank you, Harvey. There's our basin, that intruded zone's right along here.
Okay.
So what you're looking at is right along here.
Okay.
And
the large.
This is Highway 1.
Right.
There.
Okay. So it's all east of Highway 1. And the larger water district area then is that gray shaded area.
It's all the gray that goes clear out. There's the San Andreas Fault. Right in here.
Yeah. Okay, got it. Thank you.
And Mary, can you outline the coastal zone of your district there?
The where we distribute the water.
What you're referring to as the coastal zone.
Yeah. The delivered water zone is about here. So it's from, it goes as far as the southern part of our boundary at Highway 1 and goes up around here.
And it's roughly split in half north to south between the intruded area and the non-yet intruded area.
North to south.
Well, in the next slide, that shows the intrusion area. That one.
Okay.
On that slide, the intruded area is part of your coastal zone, right? Not all of your coastal zone. I'm just trying to get a geographical sense of the boundaries of your coastal zone.
Yeah, so our delivered water zone is right in here. Starts about here and goes down here.
And is that coincident with your coastal zone, your delivered water
coastal
zone?
Coastal zone, do you mean in the Coastal Act coastal zone?
No, what you've been referring to as your coastal.
Coastal delivery zone.
Perhaps.
Yeah, delivered water zone, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're one and the same. And they're only a subset of the intruded area? That coastal delivered zone is...
Delivered water zone is about here. Yeah. And we had talked about putting pipeline up here, and that may happen with the basin management plan update that we need to extend pipeline up into this area.
Okay.
But the delivered water zone right now is in this area.
So most of your coastal delivered zone is in the intruded area?
Yes. Yes.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
I've got another question for you. I don't know if you have the answer to this, but let's see. I'm looking for a number of acre feet of water intruded, and what I'm looking at is that darker gray area that you showed me that's on this, the bottom right quadrant of this. And so if you were to run that transect AA prime from the top to the bottom along this light green portion of intrusion, do you have an estimate for how many acre feet that represents?
You know, I do think that was calculated at one time. Right. I can't tell you offhand. I think it's something like a couple hundred thousand acre feet over a 50-year period. Yeah.
Okay, but how much does it represent? That's what it represents right now of seawater intruded.
Yeah, I believe so. Loss
that gives me a sense for what 12,000 acre feet represents in terms of the total amount that's already there,
right,
and
right.
what that changes over time.
Right. Yeah, at 12,000 acre feet a year versus what was closer to 20,000 acre feet a year times 50 years, water usage has obviously increased the last 20 years versus 30 or 40 years ago. But
okay. All right. Any other? Mr. Briggs?
Yeah, I think I heard some conflicting information in terms of your overall goal with regard to seawater intrusion, because I could be wrong, but I thought I heard you say that your basic goal would be to maintain kind of status quo with the amount of intruded area. If you could halt it where it is, that you'd be happy with that, something along those lines, right?
Our goal right now is to stop seawater intrusion.
Right. Okay. But what about actually reversing it, and that is not being satisfied with halting it where it is, but reversing it?
I don't know how to answer that. I mean, I don't know of anywhere where they have reversed seawater intrusion effectively, and the fact that part of this is premised on us replacing pumping in the coastal area. Even if it were to be reversed in that area, we're delivering water as part of the goal here. So I'm not sure. I would expect that those kinds of questions would be addressed in the next basin management plan if there were additional benefits to be gained.
Okay. Because theoretically there should be the ability to reverse it. And therefore, it would make sense if you're able to achieve the goal of halting it where it is, and yet you still have this large area that's degraded, to continue to make efforts to try to eventually correct that degradation and recover parts of that aquifer.
I guess off the cuff, my response to that would be that right now the coastal growers are paying $300 an acre foot for water. And probably any project we come up with is going to end up ultimately in perhaps even doubling that amount, $600 an acre foot for water. To go beyond that and sustain agriculture in the valley, I think, would be challenging. But I think it would be it's a wonderful goal. I'm just not sure if it's feasible.
Okay. Any other board comments or questions? Okay. Why don't we take a break, because we're going to have and Mr. Schmidt.
Yes, sir.
You didn't hang around late enough last night, and I kept